This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. You've made it through another week of COVID-19. It's Friday, May 8th. Later in the episode, hear about a team of researchers developing a machine that uses ultraviolet light to sterilize protective masks. And our healthcare heroes are the nurses of Children's of Alabama today. Now for our news. Feeling a little antsy in lockdown? I mean, who isn't? Maybe try out this new trend. Get a Corona-themed piñata and then absolutely destroy it. Radio MD's Scott Webb has this story.
There are many ways to get through COVID-19, but one way we can probably all rally around is smashing piñatas made to look like the coronavirus. The mini trend is sweeping the country as many are making homemade piñatas for their kids to smash. Some people are turning to the pros for their piñatas, but in the end, it just feels like a great time to smash things. In this case, COVID-19 piñatas are doing the trick for many. Reporting for Radio MD News, I'm Scott Webb.
You've probably seen the same posts on your social media. Phone pictures of people without masks on, gatherings in New York City parks, people basically telling on each other for not following social distancing and lockdown rules. The New York Times says in some cities and counties, this vigilantism has been encouraged by municipalities that have set up special phone numbers, apps, or online forms to report violations. Some officials, though, have faced backlash for doing so. One doctor told the paper it felt Orwellian. However you feel about the rules in your town, just remember, your neighbors can see that party in your backyard, too. I turn to Google to really search for anything, like to the point where I'm glad people can't see all the dumb questions I've typed in. A lot of them actually have to do with random medical issues. Which brings me to this next story. What Google searches tell us about our coronavirus thoughts and fears. Radio MD's Bill Klaproth has more.
So what are people searching on Google? Well, according to Google's data editor, Simon Rogers, he says searches are falling into two camps. There are people searching for the big issues around the virus. Is there a vaccine yet? Or why does one drug work? Or what are the symptoms? And then the other side is the fallout from the virus, which are searches around things like loneliness and big emotional issues. And then there are also things like how to shred chicken, or how do I bake bread, or how do I keep the kids entertained? Things we're all going through. Then Simon says there's things that would have seemed weird 6 weeks ago that don't seem weird now, such as drive-by birthday party, which has spiked 5,000%. And of course, what I'm going to go search right now, how to fix a botched self haircut. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
And if you're looking for ways to keep busy this weekend, have you ever thought about all the things you could do with food scraps? Regerminating them, making natural plant dyes, fruit wine cocktails, even meat fat candles? Find a link to these crafts in our show notes. The shortage of critical personal protective equipment has been a persistent problem for medical and other frontline workers as they battle the COVID-19 pandemic at close range day after day. A team of researchers at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute has developed a potential solution, a machine that uses ultraviolet light to sterilize thousands of protective masks each day, rendering them safe for reuse. Joining us today to talk a bit more about that project is Deepak Vashish, the director of the Center of Biotechnology and Interdisciplinary Studies at Rensselaer in Troy, New York. Tell us about why you and your team started looking into technology to clean and reuse PPE.
Yeah, that's a great question. We got a request from the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, which is in New York City. Sinai and RPI have been working together for the last 4 to 5 years. So we're sort of their technical partners. And they indicated to us that, you know, there is a growing problem with the potential shortage of PPE with the increase in the COVID-19 cases in New York City. Mm-hmm. And they would want to explore solutions which could involve reusing the PPE, which is the personal protective equipment, mm-hmm. in particular N95 masks, and, you know, wanted to see if we had any solutions we could come up with. And that was the motivation of starting down this line.
Why was it important for you and your team to get involved with, you know, trying to find relief and help during this crisis?
So I think as we all looked at what was unfolding nationally and also internationally, being a technological university, we sort of you could think we felt at the sideline and we want to get more directly involved. And there are a lot of areas which RPI has a lot of strength in, the data analytics being one of them. And you probably saw this announcement online by President Trump that RPI has been very directly participating in the data analytical aspect for the national effort. And so that's one example which we, which part of our faculty got involved in. And this would be the other example that we wanted to be more directly at the forefront and help in the best way we can. And this seemed to be a important problem in which we had expertise to solve. So we said, let's do it.
So tell us a bit about this system you've developed. How does this light technology help with the PPE shortage problem we're seeing?
The way the system works is that the goal with this system and any other system would be to look at the N95 mask after it's been used. And you would assume that it's been contaminated after being exposed to OR or an ICU environment. Mm-hmm. And it would contain, you know, COVID-19 or other viruses or bacteria in that mask. And the idea would be that if you were to take it off and reuse it, what is the best and the most efficient way to sterilize the mask for reusing it? So we looked at different technologies, and there have been other technologies out. For example, there's hydrogen peroxide, which is being used very commonly now, and ethylene oxide. So we looked at UVC because it's a relatively simple system which can be deployed in a clinical environment. It does need people to run the system, but it's not as specialized. If you're looking at eventually a long-term application in nursing home, and we had some interest from our local nursing home and other local hospital systems too. So that system, which is based on a light, which is a simple plug-in system, can work more efficiently and universally than a gas-based system, because you have to, you know, come up with a certain requirement and you have the supplies. And again, if you can develop a system which is UVC based and you have the lamp source and you can build up a system, you're not relying on a constant supply of anything else like gas or something else, which may run out or may not be as readily available. So, you know, all those criteria put in together, we converged towards a UVC solution. The other aspect was you're also concerned to what extent, you know, different kind of gases may affect the mask material, the strap, and other aspects of it. So UVC seemed like a good starting point.
Great. Is there anything else you want to add about the work you guys are doing over there?
So about this system, we built up this system, which was, you know, which uses the UV light lamps and the mask circulate around the system. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that we use this specific setup, but there are 3 to 4 masks which run, and there are 2 light sources which simultaneously are exposing both the surfaces of the mask at the same time, which allows it to be more comprehensively sterilized. And we came up with the setup, then we tested it using some model viruses and found that it was effective in killing the model viruses. And once the system was designed, we sent it to New York City, where it is being evaluated by Mount Sinai, and they're looking at its efficacy in addressing COVID-19. So can it kill, and what is its killing efficiency? And once that gets established, we will optimize the dose, which will include, you know, the mask run on a conveyor belt system. So how quickly you run the conveyor belt and what dose and time of exposure you give. We want to optimize those parameters based upon the results we are getting. So it's a combination of the UV technology and virology and some biotechnology all combined together to see how we can develop a solution in that space. And once we have this data, we plan to reach out to FDA to get a EUA, which is the early user authorization. And once that is done, this will be ready to work. So it's a system which has been developed and it's being characterized before it can be deployed. So I want to make that point clear that this is an exciting development, but we have few steps to go before the finish line.
Absolutely. Well, it's always good to hear that something is on the way to being, you know, a positive impact in this whole thing, either way, I think.
No, I think that's the exciting part. And I, you know, the in the long term, the other interesting aspect of it, that once the system is developed and deployed, it is very much, I would say you can customize it. You can make it in different sizes, which means it can be deployed across the world in different settings where, you know, there is less reliable energy and not so much availability of things, because eventually you can make a smaller system and run on alternate energy sources as well. So I think that's the exciting part, that unfortunately that the COVID-19 crisis is not behind us, and and hopefully we would not need to run in a situation where PPEs are getting dramatically, you know, less available around the world. And healthcare professional and also workers who are at frontline, you know, who do a lot of other aspect in a hospital system, are unnecessarily exposed to situations where they should not be exposed to. So the idea is that maybe this makes a difference in that space and more broadly in the medical community.
Well, thank you so much for your time and all that you and your team are doing during this crisis. We're heading down south for our healthcare hero segment today, which is Andrew Lohr. He is the chief nursing officer and vice president of nursing at Children's of Alabama. And he tells us a bit about what his team has seen during the pandemic. Andrew, tell us about how your staff has been holding up during this COVID-19 crisis. How are the nurses doing?
They're doing pretty well. You know, it's certainly been a challenge. And in the pediatric world, we have not been facing at the same level that some of our adult colleagues have been. Mm-hmm. But we have had several COVID-positive patients throughout our organization, and then many more PUI, which are those persons under investigation where we're not quite sure and can't rule them out until we've had test results. So we have designated specific areas of the hospital where those patients go, but I would say nurses throughout are getting some exposure to that. You know, they have really taken this on as a challenge, and they make me proud and impress me every day with just their willingness to, you know, come to additional simulation trainings to learn how to, you know, don and doff PPE appropriately, to working our, we've implemented, you know, screening stations throughout all the entrances of our organization, and nurses are, you know, willingly signing up to work those so that they can help keep their colleagues safe for anyone that's entering the hospital. So for the most part, it's been a very positive environment that we're witnessing here, which has been nice.
And tell us about some of the nurses you have on your staff. How have you guys just been staying, you know, positive and upbeat through all of this? I'm sure it's a little more necessary because children are involved, right?
Yeah. You know, I think people that tend to be attracted to work within the pediatric environment tend to be nurses that are very positive and upbeat. I mean, I like to think all nurses are that way, but particularly, I'm partial to the ones that we work with and that I've always worked with in a pediatric environment. And so they are just, you know, they have very positive attitudes. We have nurses that are donating, you know, homemade masks that they're making, you know, on their downtime, bringing into the organization that we can hand out to patients and families or to their coworkers, you know, bringing in food. You know, all of those kind of attitudes really help. Of course, we've had to cancel some staff and not use them as frequently as we have been in the past. And so, but I have noticed people keeping a really positive attitude about, you know, we're getting emails and, you know, stopping me in the hallway, just thankful that, you know, the way the organization is supporting the staff members throughout and everything that we're doing to try to keep everybody, you know, employed and paid well and, you know, all of those kind of things. So it seems to be a really great environment for them, and I'm witnessing some really cool things.
What are those things that you, do you have any off the top of your head that you might have, that might have stood out as just people maybe going above and beyond?
We have two amazing nurses who work in our hematology oncology unit who have taken this situation, and they just got together and were talking about doing this. You know, maybe we could raise a little bit of money that we could pay for meals for other organizations, that we could bring meals to healthcare workers. And so they named it Heroes to Heroes. And just right in front of their eyes, this kind of thing blew up, and I think at this point they've raised about $10,000, and they have been able to provide meals to hospitals throughout the state, whether it's to nurses, to EVS workers, to physicians, all over a department. We just received a donation of 850 biscuits yesterday from their group, but that was our first donation here at Children's, but they've donated to hospice agencies and it's just so amazing to see something like that come out of this. And it was two colleagues that just sat around thinking like, what can we do? And it's just really taken off, and I'm just so impressed and proud of them. That's been so neat. And then this happens to be National Nurses Week, so we've had a lot of fun going around to all the units. And one of the things that we do is we award 10 nurses throughout the organization in areas of excellence. So that might be surgical services and acute care, critical care. Mm-hmm. And with each of those, we've seen these, you know, amazing stories of what people are doing. One of our nurses we gave away today, she had just completed her 4,000th critical care life flight transport, and wow, she was our winner of our excellence in critical care. But just that alone is something that she is just part of her day in and day out job. That I think to the average, you know, to her, that's what she thinks. But to everyone else, to think that, you know, she puts her life at risk every day that she comes in to go get critically ill kids and bring them back here, it's pretty amazing.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Andrew. It sounds like you have a pretty incredible staff over there.
We do. I'm incredibly blessed to work with these individuals, and you know, these are trying times, and we all wish we weren't going through them. But we keep saying around here, we've been around for 109 years. This isn't the first challenge we faced. It won't be our last, but together we'll just have to try to get through it.
Find out more about Children's of Alabama online at childrensal.org. This has been Radio MD COVID-19 Daily. Nominate a hero for our show or tell us how you're spending the weekend at COVID19daily@radiomd.com. That's COVID19daily@radiomd.com. Have a great spring weekend, and we'll catch up on Monday. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home and stay healthy.